I'm here.
Okay, welcome everyone to Masterclass on this day, December 8th, 2022. Glad to have everybody here. Welcome, welcome. I think you should have a fun time hearing everybody and talk about their skills and things that they're really great at doing. We love listening to it. Some of it's time, IT related, some of it's business related. But we love hearing it because it helps us learn just a little more. I think we'll start with April. She's got 30 minutes on the clock for this meeting, and then Eduardo and Devin will be after that. Are you ready, April?
I am ready. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Yep. Let me share my screen. Everyone see that okay?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
All right. Tonight I'll be showing you how to build an analytics dashboard. Data visualization and business intelligence tools are software applications that allow businesses to gather, analyze, and visualize data to create interactive reports, simplify decision making, and generate actionable business insights. Organizations have a lot to choose from as far as, different business intelligence and data visualization tools. Examples of popular ones include Tableau, Microsoft Power BI, Qlik, and DataBox. I'll be demonstrating Microsoft Power BI for you all. First, what is Microsoft Power BI and why would you want to use it? Well, Power BI is more than just a single application. Instead, is it a collection of software consisting of three essential elements? You have the Windows application called Power BI Desktop. You've got an online service called Power BI Service and Power BI mobile apps for phones and tablets. Two additional features are Power BI Report Builder for creating paginated reports and Power BI Report Server for on-premises reporting. The Power BI seamlessly integrates with Excel, PowerPoint, SharePoint, and Teams, so it's really good for organizations that are already using Windows applications. In addition, Power BI includes over 500 pre-built and custom data connectors, allowing you to access data from multiple unrelated sources, whether on-premises or in the cloud. Power BI also has built-in AI capabilities, such as natural language queries and AI-powered insights. So Microsoft Power BI is a powerful tool for creating data visualizations and business intelligence. This is an example of a standard workflow in Power BI that begins by connecting to data sources in Power BI Desktop and ends by sharing with end users so they can use the Power BI service and mobile apps to view and interact with your reports. This workflow shows how the three main Power BI elements work together. I'll walk you through each step of this workflow and show you how to access, clean, join, explore, and visualize a data set in Power BI Desktop. Lastly, I'll show you how to optimize reports for viewing in the Power BI mobile app and share them using the Power BI service. Before diving into the demonstration, I wanted to provide some background on the data I'll be using for the demo. I tried to measure gender imbalance in the film industry using the Bechdel test. The Bechdel test originated from a comic strip written in 1985 by cartoonist Alison Bechdel and has been used as a litmus test to measure Hollywood's gender bias. Next time you're watching a movie, you can perform your own Bechdel test by asking yourself three questions. First, does the film have at least two named women? Second, do those women talk to each other? And third, do they speak to each other about something other than a man? I collected data from the Bechdel test movie list, the number site, and 538 to visualize during this demonstration. And here you can see a copy of the original comic strip written by Bechdel. Okay, so now I'll be switching over to Power BI for the demonstration portion of my presentation. Our first step is to open Power BI Desktop. I already had it open because it usually takes a few seconds to load. Once you open Power BI, you'll see the main Power BI Desktop window. There's usually this welcome screen, which you can just close. So I'll go over the layout and available sections on this screen. At the top of the window, you'll see the ribbon. The Home tab contains the most common operations that are available to perform. The Insert tab allows you to insert various objects. You've got new pages, new visual, more visuals. You can also do the AI visuals, integrate with Power Platform, or add additional elements like text box, buttons, shapes, or image. The modeling tab enables additional data modeling capabilities like adding custom tables and columns and calculating measures. The View tab has options for formatting the page layout. You can change the theme, adjust the page view, and choose other page options. This is also where you'll adjust the mobile layout, which we'll do later. And the Help tab gives you self-help options and links to online communities. On the left side of the window, you'll see these three icons. You've got Report, Data, and Model. This right center space is the canvas where we'll create the visuals. The visualizations pane on the right side of the window lets you select different visualizations, add values to the visuals, and add columns to the X-axis, Y-axis, or filters. The fields pane is where you'll see the tables generated after importing data. You'll see it's telling us we haven't loaded any data yet, and we can click data here to start importing a data set. So that's what we're going to do next. Instead of doing it here, though, I'm going to use the Home tab, click Get Data. Once you click on click Data, you'll see your common data sources. You can also click More. Since the first one I'm importing is going to be an Excel workbook, I'm going to click on the first option. We're going to select Movies 2016. I'm going to select Sheet. So you can even import Excel files that have multiple sheets in one workbook. Since I only have one, it's only giving me the option to click one. Now, if we click Load, the data from the Excel file is added, and we'll be directed right back to the canvas to start creating reports. However, we don't want that because we'll add multiple data sources and we need to clean the data. So I'm going to click on Transform Data instead of Load. Transform Data will allow us to perform data shaping operations like merging columns, adding additional columns, changing data types, and importing more data. So this takes us to the Power Query Editor window. Let's go ahead and import the rest of our data. So we click on New Source, we're gonna click on More. And this time, my file is a JSON document. So I'm gonna click on that one, Get All Movies. And there is my second query. So again, we're going to click on New Source. This time we're going to select Text, slash CSV. I think it's moving a little slowly because I have multiple Power BI options open. Okay. We're going to click on this movie data. Here you can select the different delimiter options. So this one's just a comma. And it does try to read the delimiter, so it automatically selects a comma. And then I'm going to click on New Source one last time. Select Excel workbook. I already selected movie, so this time I'm going to select the other file. All right, now notice that the four files I connected now show as queries in the left pane. The center panel shows a preview of the data. On the right, you'll see the query settings pane. The applied steps box records the steps performed while transforming the data. And in the view tab, we can turn this off and on. What the column quality, column distribution, and column profile do is they give you additional information about your columns. It's helpful. These options are helpful to determine if any errors or no values exist quickly. It also shows the number of distinct and unique values, the value distribution, and statistics for each column. So very useful. I always go in and click those three automatically. All right. So now I'm ready to clean the data. The first thing I want to do is I want to change these query names to something more descriptive so that the tables have descriptive names that make sense later. See, sheet one is not very helpful. So I'm going to change this to box office revenue 2016. Next, I'm going to click on the second one. I'm going to change this name to movies 1970-2022. Movies 1970-2013. And I had a hard time coming up with a name for this one, so I just went with tests. So next, I'm going to correct the column data types. Power BI already tries to guess the data types of each column when importing the data, but sometimes it's wrong. Nobody's perfect. So we must check each column and correct some of them. So I like to just go down the list like I did when I changed the names. So we know movie ID, while it is a number, it's more of an identification. We're not going to do calculations on this column, so we're going to change it to text. And we're going to select replace current. Release date is date, that's correct. Movie title is correct. Rating, genre. These we're going to change to fixed decimal numbers since these are currency. We're going to do the same thing here. Change to text, replace current. Again, we're going to change these to fixed decimal, replace current. And you'll see when we change these two, it created an error because they said NA. We're going to fix that in a moment. And we're also going to do the same thing to this last one. So these I'm actually going to change to true and false. Because the zero essentially means they failed the test. A one means they passed. We're going to change it to a true and false, true for pass, false for fail. And you get the idea. I have another one open that has all of the data changes completed. So I don't want to go through every step all over again. After we've changed, corrected the data types, the next thing we're going to do is we're going to drop some of the columns that we don't need. If we know we're not going to use the columns on our analysis, we might as well get rid of them. A couple of those are going to be this one right here. We can right click on it. Hit remove. Also, one thing I like about Excel and also Power BI always says there's always one way to skin a cat. So if you don't like that one, there's also home, remove columns, and we just did the same thing. Also going to remove this one, remove columns. So to remove this row that has the error in it, we're going to do remove row. We're going to select remove errors. Removing it did when I did it earlier. Okay. We'll move on because it was removed out of the other one that I'm going to move on to when we actually start the visualizations. All right, the next thing I want to do, so when I named this table, I said 1970 to 2022, but if you'll look at the years, this goes way further than 1970, all the way to 1874. This came from the vegetable movie list. It's user generated, so it has a lot of movies. I didn't want to go back that far, so what I'm going to do is use remove rows again. And I'm going to use remove top. So I kind of scroll down. And there is a find and replace. I didn't think about that till just now because I could find and replace 1970. or not replace, but just find so that I know what row it's on. But 1970 starts with row 1359, so I'm going to go remove rows, remove top rows. And now they actually start at 1970. One other thing I want to go is this one just has a extra row at the bottom. So we want to remove that one as well. So we're going to do remove blank rows. So now I've completed all of the data transformation steps I want to complete. So I'm going to click on Close and Apply to load the data into Power BI. This, however, usually takes a few minutes, especially if the data is bigger, and this is what I didn't want to wait on. So I'm just going to close out of this as well, because this is the untitled one. And as you can see, I already have my report with my nice, clean data. After we've cleaned the data, we're going to kind of complete our connection, creating relationships. So I already did this as well, but to do a new relationship, you can do manage relationships, auto detect, which this one, it did automatically detect. The other ones I had to add. So you'll click on new. Select the table you want to connect, relate, click the other one. And it says there's already a relationship between these two columns because I already did it. But in this case, it would be many to many, single, and then you would normally click OK. And so that's what I did for each of these relationships. So once you've created your relationships, this helps relate the table so that when you go into the actually creating data visualizations, you can pick different fields and columns from different tables. And filter them correctly so you get the right results or the results you want to get. Also from here, it's a good idea to hide some columns that you're not going to use in your data visualizations. The biggest one being your ID numbers. While the ID numbers are important for relating the tables, they're not important for visualization. So you can go through, you can hit hide. For example, when I click on movie ID, you would toggle, and then I can toggle it back to yes so that it is hidden. Also, I wanted to show how to create the date table. So I did this, it's a good idea to have a separate date table and then relate it to the other dates. It helps with time series or other data visualizations that are you're wanting to analyze time. So you can create the date table by going to new table. You're going to type in what's called a DAX expression. So in this case, we would say date equals calendar date. And this takes two arguments. So the first one is the date is going to be the start. So since the furthest I went back was 1970, we're going to put 1970, January 1st. And then we're going to say date again. And this is the second argument is the end. So we want to do 2022, December 31st, Normally we would hit enter. I don't want to do that because I already created the date table. So we're just going to go in and delete it. All right, now we can create the visual we want in our report. So we're going to go click on the report icon. We have our canvas. So the first chart I'm going to do is I'm going to do domestic box office revenue for the top 50 movies in 2016. I want to do a clustered column chart, which is this one. So I'm going to select this. I'm going to create my chart. I'm going to select the field. For the x-axis, we want to do genre. For the y-axis, we're going to do sum of domestic box office. And for legend, we're going to go down to the test table and we're going to select special. So what this does is it tells us the total domestic box office revenue for movies in 2016, because this table only contains the top 50 grossing movies for 2016. And it breaks it down by genre. The green table is means true, means they passed the Bechdel test. False means they failed the Bechdel test. As we can see, adventure genre was the highest grossing, and movies that passed the Bechdel test earned more than movies that failed the Bechdel test. So the next one we're going to do is, you know, maybe we want to see, well, has representation gotten any better over time? Like, do more movies pass the Bechdel test now than they did in 1970? Has that improved over time? Has the Bechdel rating improved? So we want to insert a new visual. We're going to select line chart. And it's going to be release year on the x-axis. And test rating on the Y. And instead of count, we want to change this to average. Now this data set came from the movie Bechdel test. Now what they do is they give each movie a rating of either a 0, 1, 2, or 3. Either they passed 0 of those 3 criteria, they passed 1, they passed 2, or they passed all 3. So I decided to do an average of that. So essentially in 2022, the average Bechdel test rating on that site was 2.5. In 1970, the average was 1.98. So over time, we see a positive trend. However, we see that it has gone back down in the previous 2 years. Now for the third chart, I want to do a donut chart. We're going to go select donut. We're going to select legend. We're going to count. So like the box office revenue of 2016, this table contains the top 50 grossing movies of 2016. So we know out of those 50, 64% passed the Bechdel test, 36% failed the Bechdel test. Now I also brought in some other tests, that's what these are. While the Bechdel test has become a prevalent litmus test to measure gender imbalance in film, it doesn't address the core inequalities in Hollywood films. So there was an article in 538 that proposed 12 other tests to address other issues in the movie industry, like female representation behind the camera, problems faced by women of color, and how women are commonly represented on screen. Let's say we want to compare, you know, the breakdown of the Bechdel test and the breakdown of two of these other tests. So we're going to do another donut chart. And this time we're going to select the and again, value count. And we're going to make that a little smaller. As you can see, the co-test, which the three requirements for that one is there a non-white female identifying person in the film? Does she speak in five or more scenes? And does she speak English? So this one had 58% passed, 42% failed. And then we're going to compare one more. So we're going to do a pie chart just to change it up a little bit instead of the donut chart. First, I need to select new pie. And this time we're going to select the rate test. And again, count. And I had that backwards. I'm sorry. I switched the colors in my final because I wanted green for two. So I just read these wrong. I'm sorry, guys. So 36% failed, 64%. No, I did say that right. If I switched up the color, sorry. So, and this one, I switched up the colors on this one. So 10% passed, 90% failed the race test. So that one was, is there a Black woman in the movie? Is she in a position of power? And is she in a healthy relationship? So while there were, you know, a good number passed the Bechdel test, a good number passed the co-test, very few passed this one. And then we're going to do one more. I'm going to show you how to do one more, which is a scatter chart. We're going to select scatter. And for this one, we want to compare the international average, international and average domestic between movies that passed the Bechdel test and failed the Bechdel test. So on the x-axis, we're going to do domestic. And we're going to change that to average.
The internet messed up. It's okay. I was screenshotting.
Somebody's got a live mic.
We're going to put on average. And for legend, we're going to put Bechdel so that it separates between the two. So now we can see there's a positive correlation between domestic box office revenue and international box office revenue. But there's, and then both, you know, between the failed and passed the Bechdel test, they both have a positive correlation. So, and these are all eight. When I first create them, I just kind of put them all on the screen and then I actually kind of line them up, make them look nicer. So these are all eight of the charts I created. However, these are not formatted. So I'm going to go over that now, just how to make some formatting changes. First, for this one, we want to change the title. When we click on here, general title, this is where we can change the title. And it's going to be domestic box office revenue for top 50 movies in 2016. We want to center that. For also going to take the titles off the X and the Y axis. We're going to change the color. That's the right color. So I want to make sure that, because I wanted them all to match when I did it. So I want true to be the bluish green color, false to be the gold color. Effects. When I put this all together, I want there to be a border. So I'm going to click no, yes, on, sorry. 5 points. This, and then I'm going to make it transparent, and you'll see why in a minute as well. So these are just a few of the ways to change the, you know, formatting. We can also I want to remove the legend on here, and I just want to, you know, I just want this to say true and false. So in that case, we're going to turn off on the legend, but on the detail labels, I want to say category and then percent of table, and that's going to change it. So the legend's not taking up that extra room, and it's right on the data point itself. I've shown you kind of how to change the legend, change colors, change the title. Once we've done that to all 8 charts, this is what it's going to look like. I also kind of rearranged them where, you know, the bigger ones needed to be bigger so that we got all of the information. The smaller ones we could make smaller. So what we're going to do for here is we just want to add a little bit to give it a little pizzazz. We're going to add an image as the background. Next. We're going to click on the canvas. We're going to click on the format, canvas background, image. And I have a movie curtain. I'm picking up the whole way now, but I'll show you. And then we want to add an image to the top. We're going to do insert, image. We want to add a little coupon to the top. We're going to place that at the top. And then this is our final completed report with the background. As you can see, that's why I changed the transparency a little bit so that you really see through. You don't have to do that. Like I said, it's really just what you think makes look good. So some common suggestions is to keep a common theme, common color. So I kept to like 3 colors throughout the page, red, gold, and the bluish green. I kept all of the background of each chart the same color, you know, and I tried to keep so that it looks cohesive. So after we're done with this, this is where we're going to publish it. We're going to save. And now We're going to publish to Power BI service. So if we're going to click on Masterclass, I already created that workspace ahead of time. I don't want to replace it since I already did this, because that can take a few minutes too. So now basically what I did was I published it to my Power BI service account. You want to make sure that you are logged into the same account from desktop and service. And then I want to click on my report right here. We're going to click on our final report. I'm going to click on share. I'm going to click on PowerPoint. Copy that. And then I want to go back into my PowerPoint. I'm going to click on Insert, Power BI. Again, it asks you to sign in. And then we just want to paste that URL. And you can stretch it out to match the slide. And now we have a nice interactive report page in our PowerPoint presentation. So it's actually interactive. You can click on it. It'll highlight other measures and interact with other charts. So it is interactive once it's shared into Power BI. And then the last thing I wanted to show is the mobile layout. So from view, you can select mobile layout. And this is where you can optimize the layout so that it's mobile friendly when somebody wants to pull it up in the Power BI app. So in this case, we're going to make we're going to put that one up at the top. We're going to stretch it out all the way. We're going to add two, three of the donut chart and the pie chart. And then let's do this one last. So again, we're going to do that one to the bot. The edges. And now we've made and you can actually keep scrolling down so that you can fill out the rest. But there you go. That's an example of how you can kind of make it more mobile friendly and optimize it for the app. And that is my presentation. I hope I did not go over time. I'm sorry if I did.
All right. Thank you, April. That was awesome. lots of comments and kudos to you. So great job. We will save questions until the end. So Eduardo, if you are ready.
Hello. Yes, I am.
All right. Thanks.
Alrighty. I'm going to share my screen. I did pre-record my presentation just to keep everything on track on my end and make sure I shared all the information correctly. So just let me know if you guys can hear it.
Hi, everyone. My name is Eduardo Martinez, and today I'll be talking about pen testers, the hardware and software. The reason I chose this subject of the pen testers is I've always been very interested and fascinated by just the knowledge base that these people have on whatever they want to exploit. It is crazy that how much they have to know their weaknesses. It's almost like knowing the more you know about the enemy, the more you're able to exploit it. And that's how I see it, that's how they see their job. So they're focused on finding vulnerabilities for a organization, and they will study it. They would find an opportunity. They will plan out an action plan and then execute it to find any source that can be exploited. And the good part about being a pen tester is that you're able to share this knowledge to whoever you're working with, so they can build up their defenses or at least be prepared once something happens. Well, the first software I'll be speaking about is Nmap. It is a powerful network scanning and security auditing tool. It can be used to discover hosts, services, and operating systems running on a computer network. It enables users to scan networks for open ports and detect services running on those ports, as well as assess the security of the networks by using various techniques such as port state detection, operating system fingerprinting, packet sniffing, and more. Additionally, the Nmap can be used to plan network changes, detect rogue devices, and malicious hosts. Nmap is an invaluable tool for ethical hackers and security professionals. It can be used to perform a wide range of network tasks, from simple port scanning to complex vulnerability assessments. With TryHackMe, I was able to gain hands-on experience with Nmap by completing challenges that tested my understanding of the tools and its various features. Through these challenges, I was able to explore different scan techniques such as ping scans, service scans, operating systems detection scans, and more. By using Nmap in this way, I gained a better understanding of how to use it effectively in the real-world scenario. Overall, gaining experience with Nmap through TryHackMe was an invaluable experience, and I would highly recommend it to anyone who's looking to expand their knowledge of the ethical hacking or network security. Next is Metasploit. It is an open source project developed by Rapid7 to help security professionals and penetration testers find, exploit, and validate vulnerabilities. It enables users to assess the security of their systems by exploiting known vulnerabilities in software applications. Metasploit contains a comprehensive collection of exploits for various platforms and databases. These exploits are written in different programming languages such as Ruby, Python, and C++. Additionally, Metasploit includes tools for exploration that allows users to identify potential targets and launch attacks against them. Using Metasploit and TryHackMe had been an incredible experience. It allowed me to really understand the power of exploration, and it gives me an insight into just how powerful a tool Metasploit is. This has opened my eyes to the importance of network security and keeping up with patching vulnerabilities so they cannot be exploited. They also gain a much better understanding of how attackers are able to bypass search and security measures and launch successful attacks. Nessus is a powerful and easy to use vulnerability scanner and has become a staple of network security for many organizations, providing visibility into the security posture of their IT networks. It scans systems for thousands of known vulnerabilities, provides clear and actionable information to systems admins so they can quickly identify and remedy any vulnerability areas. The bestie of Nessus makes it well suited for large-scale scanning projects or automated monitoring purposes. With its extensive plugin library, users can customize scans to fit their particular environment or requirement, including external facing asset groups or specific internal applications. One of the most popular tools used for wireless network security auditing is AirCrackNG. It is a suite of tools that focuses on capturing and analyzing data packets, cracking encryption keys, and testing for vulnerabilities on networks. AirCrackNG works by capturing packets from a target wireless network and attempting to decipher them based on their encrypted headers. It eggs detailed information about each packet, including the source address and encryption type used. Once decrypted, it can be used to crack the WEP or the WPA key that can be protecting the network. Using AircCrackNG in TryHackMe was a great learning experience for me. I've heard of the tool before, but I've never used it to its full potential. After doing some research, I realized the tool can be used to crack encryption keys from captured handshake packets. With this new knowledge, I decided to give it a try on one of the challenges offered by TryHackMe. Overall, using AircCrackNG in TryHackMe was an learning experience for me. It taught me how to use this powerful tool in order to gain access to vulnerable networks. Additionally, since it's an open source, I can keep practicing and honing in my skills with this tool as often as I wish. All in all, AircCrackNG is a great way for anyone interested in the cybersecurity to learn more about network security and password cracking. Next is Burp Suite. It is an integrated platform for performing security testing of web applications. It consists of a variety of tools such as integrating proxy, a spider, automated scanner, and so on. With Burp Suite, you can identify vulnerabilities in web applications quickly and effectively. The integrating proxy feature allows you to intercept requests and responses between the browser and the server. The spider tool is used to automatically crawl websites and discover new content and functionality in them, help you uncover a hidden area that can be vulnerable to attack. The automatic scanner can be detect common security flaws such as cross-site scripting, SQL injection, and remote code execution. It can be also used to scan entire web applications for vulnerabilities. Using Burp Suite in TryHackMe has been an essential part of my learning experience. It allows me to understand the underlying requests and responses that are sent between a website and its clients, which helps me identify any weaknesses within the system. With the Burp Suite, I can intercept traffic, modify requests, scan for potential vulnerabilities, and audit web applications. This tool is incredibly useful when it comes to understanding how different web technologies work together so that I can better secure them against malicious attacks. Additionally, the Burp Suite, I can see exactly where exploitable pieces of information may reside or where authentication processes may be bypassed. All these features make Burp Suite a powerful asset in any cybersecurity arsenal. All right, so the next is the hardware side of the pen testers. So I went through quite a few websites. I tried Googling what do pen testers usually carry with them, what do they have in the arsenal. I went to actual Reddit articles. They actually ask these questions to people that are actually really doing this job, and them recommended these hardwares to use on the daily basis, or they only use them for very specific jobs. So the first one I would like to talk about is the Wi-Fi Pineapple Mark 5. It is a very powerful tool used by security professionals and hobbyists alike to audit wireless networks. It has an intuitive web interface with easy access to the latest features, including the ability to set up a rogue access point and perform client trafficking and management, spoof DNS requests, and even alter HTTP traffic, all from a single device. Well, the next hardware I would like to talk about is the Lanternum. So you can see with the picture here, it can easily be mistaken as an actual necessity for your computer. So it just connects to your USB and to Ethernet. So in most jobs I've been at or work, they usually have like a tower that never gets moved. And imagine someone that not supposed to be there gets access to it, and all they have to do is disconnect your Ethernet, plug in to USB, and plug it to this device. And the Lanturtle is a powerful pen testing tool from Hack5, providing users with an easy-to-use and portable device that can be used to perform security assessment. It runs on the open-source Linux operating system, allowing users to easily customize it for their own needs. The Lantern offers 5 different payload modules. The first payload is the SSH tunneling payload, which allows tunnel into a remote network using SSH encryption, enabling safe and fast data transfer while bypassing firewalls and other content filters. The second payload, remote desktop control, provides the user with remote access to control a system from another location. Thirdly, there's the packet capture payload, which captures packets sent across the local network, allowing for the analysis of the network traffic. The fourth payload is the Metasploit payload, which allows for the execution of Metasploit modules from a remote location. This can be used to exploit security vulnerabilities or access hidden content on the website. Last but not least, there are the custom shell payloads, which provide users with an interactive shell in order to execute custom commands and scripts. Its small form factor makes it ideal for its covert operations or for deploying into restricted environments. The next hardware piece is the USB rubber ducky. It is a powerful tool for penetration testers and security experts. It can be used to quickly and easily infiltrate a system by exploiting existing weaknesses or gaining access to the system by using malicious code. It works by emulating a USB keyboard, allowing it to eject keystrokes at superhuman speed into any device with an available USB port. This allows a user to bypass authentication measures such as passwords, pins, and biometrics in order to gain access to a target system. Additionally, the USB rubber ducky tiny size makes it perfect for covert operations since it can be disguised as an innocent-looking flash drive. So this is the reason when you find a flash drive on the floor, it's best to give it to the security up front. It's not really a good idea to plug it into your own system just because of this. Or it can be it's something else that may not as malicious, but you just never know and don't want to take the risk being the one that finds it and put it into your job's laptop. And that can be not only a security hazard, but it can also put your job at the line because your curiosity. The next hardware is the LANTAP. It is a network troubleshooting tool used to detect and diagnose problems on a local area network. It can be used to monitor the traffic of devices on a LAN, determining the cause of any issues and identify potential bottlenecks. LANTAP allows IT professional to quickly assess performance metrics and make necessary adjustment for optimal performance. Additionally, it provides real-time monitoring capabilities and that allows administrators to stay informed about how their network is functioning at any given time. With this extensive reporting features, LANTAP can be provide detailed information about exactly where and when an issue is occurring, allowing effective problem solving with minimal disruption. In short, LANTAP is an asset in maintaining network health and ensuring maximum uptime. Last but not least is the Raspberry Pi. For pen testing, it has become an increasingly popular option, especially among those with limited hardware resources. This small, affordable device is capable of running a range of security tools and providing a great platform to conduct penetration tests on networks and systems. Its low cost for the Raspberry Pi is significantly cheaper than traditional hardware platforms used in pen testing, making it an affordable choice for budget-conscious testers. Its utility, Raspberry Pis are programmable and can be used to run various operating systems, providing flexibility in terms of which tools can be used during tests. Its portability, the size of the Raspberry Pi means it can be easily be carried around with you and used in multiple locations. An easy setup. Setting up a Raspberry Pi for pen testing is virtually straightforward, making it a great option for those or just getting started with pen testing. And here are some of the resources I have on finding the information for this presentation. And also, I didn't include them, but I also used some articles I found in there, and just a bunch of Reddit articles asking pen testers questions about hardware and software, what they should use. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Eduardo. I learned a lot of things, lots of goodies in there. I'll definitely have to go back and rewatch this. Thank you. So looks like Devin, last but not least, are you ready?
I am.
Take her away. Just hit the share button and then choose the screen. Oh, you know, you've done it before in chat meetings.
I don't need to include my audio this time.
I can see it.
Is it cool? Okay, cool. My name is Devin Burrington, and this is my slides. I'm doing what is helpful in Unity, and you know, some tips and tricks like that. I haven't been working in Unity for long, but I have learned a few things from it. I know some people don't know exactly what Unity is or like the many things that it can do, so I figured I would go a bit more in depth about you know, what it provides and what you can do. So let's see. So the big question usually is, what is Unity? And it is a 2D and 3D game engine, as most people know it. And this is something that's been around for quite a few years. I want to say back into 2005. This is something that was created with the intention of reducing the stress on the developer, pretty much. As far as anybody knows, if you've been in tech for a while or if you've been playing video games for a while, you know that certain development tools for game devs weren't as plentiful as they were now. You have things not just with Unity, but also with Unreal Engine, things like that. So this is sort of like a breath of fresh air when it finally came out. For Unity nowadays, the main focus has been to be as streamlined as possible. So they've been trying to make things, certain apps that will, you know, make the process easier for people. As you can see on like things on my screen here, there's things I've been working on as well. Certain things like the main camera and the game manager and just certain scripts they've really done a good job with. Something that's always helped with Unity as well is the asset store. Something that has actually done a great deal for me. Going through and doing multiple projects I've been doing in Unity, from the Brick Breaker I did last week or a week or two to this one that I'm working on now that I'm doing for a project as well. But Unity has been really big in a couple of different fields, not just the 2D field and the 3D field. They also work in the augmented reality and the virtual reality field as well. And I think the 3D development is the one that they are certainly pushing for right now. That being said, Unity isn't essentially limited just to games. They're also doing many other things in the field itself. That being said, it's not as in depth as what they're doing in the 3D field as well. With that being said, I've been working on some stuff that I wanted to kind of show off here as far as like the character input, something I was going through and I was learning, and something that I'm trying to actually go and learn more about because I don't know a whole lot. But I do know that I have created a little controller here, and it's something that I thought was really cool. Especially with all the games that I've been playing and things that I've been trying to do. And so it's nice to learn something new, essentially. So this is what I found out about it. And you can create a simple controller for a computer game just through this. So things like pressing the plus button, you can name it whatever you want. This can be named just new. And then you have here, you can name this, say move. After naming this, go through the buttons. For something like a game you would play on the computer, you would use the value and you would go through and find the vector 2. After that, the plus button again would show you a couple different options, but since it's something like a computer game, we would just go and click here, delete this binding here, and then bam. So these are the different bindings that you can have. Of course, up, down, left, right, like usual. And then after this, you would go through and find where you'd want to connect it to. Now with Unity, now it's a lot easier to do things. They have a lot more options. As you can see, touch screen, you have keyboard, you have the mouse, the joystick, the gamepad. And even though the gamepad itself, there's a lot more in depth than just the simple left, right, WASD. It's still a lot simpler than it would have been. But for this, I'm just going to go through and push listen. And this is the up key, so W. And it's just as simple as this to make a player input. I pressed the wrong key. There we go. All right, left. Bam. Oop. And then there you go. And so this is how you would make just a simple character input. And once you do that, you have the option to save asset, but I already have something similar in here, so I don't want to save it. But you can see in here as well that I've made other things, just another thing. This would be something like an attack, just the left mouse button. And then bam, this is the one that I made initially the other day for this game. But yeah, that is something that I learned recently, and it actually is pretty helpful. I had a little tutorial here too, just to show off how you would go through and do the character input if you wanted to for the keyboard and mouse. I didn't think it would be that simple, but it actually was. Another thing that I was learning trying to go through was different commands and attributes. I was doing different attributes. Didn't really know what certain ones were, so I had to actually go through and research some of the stuff after I watched tutorials and things like that. And things like the serialized field is something that actually really helps me out, especially trying to get certain things to show up on screen. So for instance, if I was to go to my player here and I was to go through the display name, the current health, the max HP. Yeah, these four, like trying to get that to pop up, I didn't really know how to do it. I was throwing things in as a public void and things like that, and I didn't need to. The only thing I really needed to do was to make this, if I can show up my code here. I have like 100 things on my computer right now, so it might be a little slow. Come on. Don't do it to me now. Visual Studio Code. Scripts. Let's see, player script. Boom. Open. Player script. Nope. Come on. Trying to get this to pop up on my screen. Let me see. It is not. But nonetheless, this is something that I had to do. And I have it saved here as well. So this is another one of the things that I had to do for the scripts as well for the equip controller. So I was using a serialized field and I was able to actually sit there and put this stuff on the screen rather than make it a public. I could have made it a private instead. And then I was able to actually put the data in, be able to adjust it inside the inspector instead of going through and actually adjusting it in here. So it made a great deal of difference. It actually really helped out a lot. And it's just like little simple things here and there that I had to change, and that I can now change in here instead of having to go back into my code. Oops, sorry about that. Dad cooking something downstairs. But yeah. But there was like various other things that I was going through, especially trying to figure out, because I didn't know if I wanted to use Unity or I wanted to use Unreal Engine. So it was nice to kind of go through this as well and to see the plus and minuses on why I should go with Unity. And of course, they're both free and there's a bunch of assets and things that I can use for them. But Unity is just, it's a lot more beginner friendly. And there's a lot of things that were a lot easier for me to do and to understand going through Unity than going through this. But yeah, a lot of the things are just point and click and creating. I had to follow a few different tutorials for a good amount of the things, especially going through some of the scripts since I am rather new. But yeah. But yeah. And that is what I have to do for my presentation.
All right. Thanks, Devin. That was awesome. I really enjoyed watching you play the game. I see that you have attack now, which is going to be
more actually, awesome. Actually hits now, so I'm not getting attacked around the forest.
There you go. You're not going to get beat up by the goblin anymore.
No, not at all.
Looks like Michael Huskin has his hand raised. Go ahead, Michael.
That was accidental, sorry.
Oh, okay. Who else has their hand raised? George.
Yeah, I have a question. On the masterclass, so does it have to be totally PowerPoint slides, or can you do video as well, like include video and stuff like that? So I get, meaning like, let's say I wanted to show putting together a virtual machine and using Metasploit and stuff like that in the virtual machine. Am I able to do that, or does it have to?
Yeah, you can do a live demo if you want.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be all PowerPoint, right?
No. Uh-uh.
All right, that was my main question. All right, thank you.
You're welcome. April?
I was going to offer to share if anybody wants to use the data I collected to kind of play around with Power BI and learn some more. I'm more than happy to share that with you. So just let me know.
All right, thanks. Does anybody have questions for April, Eduardo, or Devin? Because if not, I do.
I wish I was paying more attention. I'm sorry. I'm trying to get everybody straight on the internship side. I did see, I'm going to look back over Devin's video because I was just all the way lost. The whole interface is confusing to me, but that's not to say he did not do a good job. So I want to vocally say you did an amazing job, Devin. It's just way over my head. So I don't want you being discouraged by me fussing in the comments. It wasn't about your presentation at all.
Said a lot of stuff.
I have another question, two questions. The one that Devin just showed, is that like you can do gaming from beginning, like from scratch and build your game?
Yes.
On a Unity? Okay. And for April, you posted the other day the all day class for the Power BI. And that's from 9 to 10 o'clock for that class or something like that.
You can adjust it. They had times, like when I looked at it, when I signed up, they were all over the place. Like I ended up doing one that was from like 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. because they're usually like 8 hours long. But you can go in there and you can adjust the start times. And then there's ones that are,
like if you're looking for an odd time, you can choose one that's being done in like Europe or something. And then that way it's kind of like if you need to do it at night or something, it'd probably be that. But normally it's like during business hours, I think. Like the one I did was from, I said from 9 to 5.
Okay. I see some said like Uruguay, Canada. I was like, is it going to be English? Are we able to attend this? Or? So that's just for the time frame, right? Those other like places and countries.
Yeah, from my understanding, you can attend any of them. You don't have to be in that country. It's just to give you an idea. So you can go in there and you can select language because so that it's, you're going to join one that's in English, unless you are do know another language. So I went in there because I wanted to make sure it was going to be in English because that is the only language I know. So I went and selected English, and then I went in and was like, okay, I want to do one that's in the morning. So you can, like, there's a slider for the time, and then you can even change the country that it's originate. And I just put United States, so I knew that the time wouldn't be like while I'm trying to sleep.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Eduardo, when you were talking about Burp Suite, that really caught my attention. If Soft Dev builds an app, can you use Burp Suite to look for like cross-site in cross-site whatever XSS and SQL injections and stuff?
Cross-site injections? I haven't played with it too much. I actually just started this week on the junior penetration testing, and I saw it there, so that's where I played with it just a bit. But that was one of the main one of the softwares that they brought up in the Reddit forums when they're asking the pen testers. So I'm not like I read about it a little bit and I did play with it a little bit, but my knowledge is limited. But it was really interesting learning how a suite like that. I never even heard of it before I started doing this masterclass, actually.
Oh really? I've heard of it, but I've never used it.
Angela, and to answer that, yes, okay. You can do injections with suite.
Okay.
I was gonna add TryHackMe has a whole section on Burp Suite. I just got done doing that, and I was gonna add it definitely does have that ability. But Nate answered it already. I didn't see he was here.
Because we want to do more quantum teaming, and we want to get all departments involved in things. And for the cybersecurity side, we do need you guys to run tests and stuff. So that was just a thought. Nate, did you have a comment question?
I got a question. For Unity, did you know that Unity is a language that you can use in Web3?
I did not.
Yes, look into that, my man. What you can do is you can build games and build tokens around them.
Actually, yes. Which can, okay, I need to write that down, actually, to look into.
Yeah, I believe Unity, I'm not sure if Blizzard and Activision, but I do believe they are too. And there's one more company out there on the blockchain. Yep. So if you're doing 2D, you could more than definitely sell it at in Decentraland. So keep that in mind too.
Thank you for that, actually.
Not a problem.
Any other questions, comments? April, I did want to ask you about Power Automate. Have you touched that at all in your Power BI stuff?
I am just starting Power Automate. Very, very little. I said I just started after I did the Power BI. I just started like the learning on Microsoft Learn for Power Automate and the other like Power Platform apps. I don't know that much about it right now.
Okay, because I know Marjorie is trying to learn it, and others throughout other departments are trying to learn it so that we can just automate a lot of these messages and stuff that Teams has. So I was going to pick your brain, but you're in the same boat as us.
Yes, I'm sorry.
That's all right. No problem. I was just wondering. All right. Does anybody have any questions or comments? If not, I'll just say thank you to our presenters, April, Eduardo, and Devin. And thank you all for joining and interacting with all of us. We do have masterclass again next Thursday. If you haven't signed up yet and you are wondering how to, if you go to Teams under Files, you will see the masterclass training sign up sheet. And then you just go ahead and whenever you see an open slot, you just put in your name and how long you want to present for. It looks like next week on the 15th, we have Sean Phillips, Jordan Mendes, and Coco. So be sure to join us for the next week's masterclass as well. All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Night, all.